So, as Shelly said, my name is Maureen Kahneman, and today I'm going to talk to you about, let me get that arrow, that's a pet peeve, our positive deviance for obesity, a county-level analysis research. The first thing is, this is the disclosure, so I have no financial relationships to disclose. Okay, so the first thing I wanted to talk about is just a little bit of background about the obesity epidemic in the U.S. So we know that obesity, it costs between $147 and $210 billion in spending and lost productivity annually. Now, the medical costs associated with obesity are about 25 to 50% higher compared with people of normal weight. The rates of obesity we see vary widely across the states. Colorado is the lowest with about 20%, and Louisiana, where we are today, is about 35%. Now, even within states, counties show wide levels of variation. So this map is using data that I'll describe in a minute, but it's looking at the county-level rates of obesity. And as you can see, that higher levels of obesity are dark blue, the lower levels are this light blue, and we see within states, as I noted before, there is variation, but then we also see some kind of regional patterning or clustering. You know, you see darker here, light kind of around the coastal area. So, as I said, there are geographic variations in obesity rates. So we have found area-level factors to be associated with higher rates of obesity, but there are problems with this research in that it's been limited to maybe small populations, so looking at rates within a particular city, or it's been narrowly focused in that they've only looked at one factor, so how obesity might be related to food stores or food deserts, but not all the other factors at play in this community. Additionally, it's been poorly controlled for potential confounders. So what could explain some of this county-level variation in obesity rates? Well, obviously, demographic makeup, characteristics of the healthcare system, the county health or education departments, maybe how proactive they are in addressing this epidemic, things like educational institutions and programs, income and resources within the county. So one thing we thought to find out is, can we identify counties that have been successful or have good strategies to deal with the obesity epidemic and really learn and potentially translate what they're doing? So in order to do that, we employed something called the positive deviance approach. So in case you're not familiar with positive deviance, what they are is they're a group or an organization that consistently demonstrate exceptionally high performance in an area of interest. So that's a little big, but if you take it to our county level analysis, these would be counties that do exceptionally well at trying to combat the obesity epidemic, and it employs two main elements. So the first idea is that the solutions to a problem that challenge a group often exist within that group already. And certain members possess the wisdom that can be generalized to improve the performance of other members. Now, the positive deviance approach has been demonstrated to be effective with a variety of health outcomes, including pregnancy, condom use, and childhood nutrition. So the next thing you might be wondering is, how did we identify positive deviance within our research? So we used data from the Robert Wood Johnson County Health Rankings database, which has data for all 3,100 counties within the U.S. And this data is compiled from a variety of sources, including the BRIFUS study, the CDC, the Census, the National Center for Health Statistics, the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention, and many, many more. And so it's all organized together, so you're able to look at data from these multiple sources at one time. So then how did we identify our particular sample? Well, the first thing we did was, using the RWJ County Health Rankings data, we calculated the mean values across U.S. counties for several variables that have been found to be related to obesity, including education level, the percent of blacks in a community, the percent of Hispanics in a community, the median income level, and state-level obesity rates. Then we took that information and we created what we called a sociodemographic profile of counties that had higher levels or had levels of these variables associated with higher rates of obesity. So it might be something like they had greater than the median value for their state level obesity rates, but less than the median value for something like income. Then what we did is we identified counties that fit that sociodemographic profile but were in the bottom quartile for adult obesity. So despite having these characteristics that might be associated with higher rates of obesity, they had lower rates within their county. We identified 15 counties that met our definition of a positive deviant, and of course due to budget constraints, which I'm sure everyone knows, we were only able to visit six, so we randomly selected and visited six of these counties. So just a quick idea to get a little background on what the counties looked like. We had as I said, a slew of sociodemographic variables that we looked at, including access to care, access to physical activity, sociodemographic factors, and as I said before, median income. So what we wanted to find before we went to these counties is we said, all right, well, we used the 2013 county health ranking data. So was it an artifact that particular year that maybe they had a lower obesity rate, but aside from that, they were much higher, or was it different? So we said, let's go back and let's look at the trends. So we were able to get data from 2004 all the way to 2010 for obesity rates, and there's a couple of things I want to draw your attention to. So the first is this black line, and that's the U.S. national average. And as you can see, it's going up pretty steadily. The next thing is that we looked at that group that fit the sociodemographic profile. So as you can see, this is the gray line. It follows a very similar trend to the U.S. average, but obviously it's higher. Then we observed three different patternings for how our sample of six counties broke out. So the first was counties like County 6 that had a pretty steady increase, similar to the U.S. and the overall profile, but they might have started at a lower number or potentially had a more gradual slope. We also saw counties like County 1 that throughout the time period we looked at remained relatively constant. So despite increasing trends in obesity nationally, they were able to keep their numbers pretty consistent. And then, of course, the trend that we like the best is County 4, where though not a huge decrease, you do see a downward slope in their obesity rates. So there are a variety of ways that we looked at them, or that we found that they patterned, but we think there's a story there to tell. So the next thing we did is we wanted to do qualitative interviews with the counties. So before even going to our six counties, what we did was we did web searching. We had student interns who actually spent a lot of time. They went to the county websites, and then they used the county website to say, okay, what's the health department website say? You know, is there a major employer that we should contact? And they really identified a potential list of people to talk to. So then we reached out to leaders at the health department or major employers, and we asked, do you have recommendations for anyone that we should talk to? And we were able to get, on average in the counties, we interviewed about 10 people. But what we did is we would spend 2 to 3 days there, kind of go around, I'm going to say tour, but, you know, get to see what the county is like. And then we interviewed 10 people from a variety of places, including, like I said, the health department. We would go to the school districts and talk to leaders, Department of Social Services, a major employer, if there was a large hospital in the area, and also in some communities, because they had a huge faith-based community, we would talk to faith leaders. So it might not be super easy to see, but this is the interview guide that we used when we talked with our participants. And it follows a normal trend in that we tried to start with a general question, asking people to describe a bit about what they did in the community and their role as it related to promoting healthy living. We also, depending on the respondents we talked to, would focus the questions a bit differently. So if I was talking with someone from the hospital, I would ask a lot about the hospital initiatives. If I was talking with someone from the Department of Recreation, I might ask a bit about the utilization of parks and trails in the community or recreational activities. We also tried to end with a general question in case there was something that they thought was important from their experience in the community that we didn't ask that they could tell us before we left. So the next step for that was analysis of these interviews. So the first thing we did is we had them transcribed, and I know we were talking about data security, so de-identified. So there wasn't anything linking the place or what they where they were from. And the first step was creating a code list. So we did that by having a team of four of our researchers were given a random sample of three of the transcripts, and then on their own independently tried to generate code lists, so for themes that might emerge. Then the team of four met together as a group, went over some of the code list, and tried to come to an agreement on, well, this is what I think this theme means, and getting at it. And then went back again and independently coded three more transcripts using that rough code list. Then we met again as a team and tried to get a finalized code list. So the next step was actually going through and coding the rest of the 60 transcripts. So that involved two faculty and one research assistant. And we took that code list and obviously went and looked at all the transcripts and would have debriefing meetings where we would kind of go through and make sure everyone was on the same page. Any additional themes that were identified were added to the code list. So what were some of our preliminary findings? Because sadly, we're still in the midst of working on this. So the first thing is we found three kind of groups. We found descriptive codes, which would be things like if it was a marketing strategy that was used, or if it was the style of initiatives or interventions done, such as if it went through the business community or it went through the faith-based community. Additionally, we found contextual characteristics, and these were qualities of the community that were not directly related to health improvement initiatives. So that would be something like if they talked about the economic environment within the community and how that impacted promoting healthy living, or the idea of a community identity and how it related to healthy living, or even just the recognition of complexity of trying to address this. The last category we had was approaches to health improvement. So this covered ideas such as we called meeting people where they were at, taking the long road, and I'll explain those in a moment, and also the idea of champions for health initiatives. So one of our kind of themes that we came up with was this idea of meeting people where they're at. And so the thought behind it was that the goal isn't to change things overnight or to come up with some regimented plan. It's rather to guide people towards an incremental change in their health using a participatory approach. So the first quote I have comes from a health educator in the community, and she was talking about during one of the programs that they had geared towards children to learn how to make healthy meals. So she said, they scoop out how many grams of fat are in their meal. It's pretty astounding. Then you go from that to, okay, so this is what is in your favorite meal. Let's see if we can create something that is just as satisfying but doesn't contain all that. You work with them on a recipe for that day that is low fat, healthful, and enjoyable. So our next quote comes from a director of the local YMCA who talks about a strategy that they had that rather than the idea that you bring people to the YMCA and expect them to take a boot camp class immediately or to learn every aspect of, you know, healthy, low-fat cooking, they encouraged them with this idea of be curious. So she said, if they go to the farmer's market and are totally overwhelmed, they're not going to use it. We do health access programming that we call it our opportunity to help people curious about what it might look like if they possibly maybe made a lifestyle change. We don't even ask them to do anything specifically regarding lifestyle change. What would it look like if I went to the farmer's market and bought a vegetable that I had no clue what it was? What would it look like if I Googled how to cook that, or if I asked a farmer at the farmer's market, hey, what is that? Then we actually handhold. We actually take those participants to the farmer's market or to the grocery store and then let them really see what those interactions look like. Because we find that those things really become the barriers. People know. We all know what we need to be doing. What we don't know is what to do when we get intimidated. So another theme that we have identified so far was this idea of thinking outside the box when you're trying to promote healthy living. And so this code gets at the idea that health leaders don't just use a package boxed approach that maybe they got from the state or they got from the federal government to deliver a message. They really need to find an idea that is going to work in their community. So that might mean they have to be open to new partnerships or strategies so that they can connect with their community and their community's needs. So the first quote comes from another health director who talked about an unusual collaboration they had done where a baseball league concession stand actually approached them and said, well, we want to serve healthy food at the games. What can we do? And so she said, you just, I think, at a community level, need to be open to unconventional partnerships and not to be scared when somebody in the community approaches you about wanting to do something about obesity. You need to be willing to be flexible and be adjustable and think outside the box. It can't be an automatic no. So then the next quote comes from a nutritional coordinator who talked about the idea of getting low-fat milk into the schools. So she said, "We were able to get low-fat milk into all schools before the USDA mandated it by doing milk taste testings in schools. Then we had one school that was real resistant. It was mostly the manager in the cafeteria because she felt the children were hungry, they were poor, and so they needed whole milk. She would put the whole milk up front and the low-fat milk way in the back. The little kids couldn't reach the way back, so it was just a matter of what they could reach. We did the taste testing there, had her running it with our staff. She became convinced that the children actually did like it, the low-fat milk. And then from that point forward, they were actually getting it, so that was exciting. So in terms of, because we are still in the analysis stage, the conclusions we've identified so far is that the answer isn't just more money. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think anyone would turn down money if it was given to them. But I think in a realistic world, we're all aware of finite resources. So really, in these positive deviant counties, they know that you have to make a dollar stretch, and they know you have to apply it to as much as you can. So they know that you have to go past that. But they do know that there are several areas that need to be addressed to promoting healthy living. So the first is this prioritizing spending and initiatives outside of just the healthcare industry. So outside of just a secondary treatment or having maybe an intervention to prevent diabetes that has more of a clinical focus, they need to see it as part of their everyday life and part of things that go on, you know, day to day, that go on when they're just living rather than when they're seeking health care. The idea of investing in community building was also crucial. Almost all of the leaders said that if, you know, they felt like a cohesive group or this idea of a community identity, they were more likely to participate in initiatives. They were more likely to be receptive that, all right, this healthy or unhealthy food that I eat doesn't just impact me. It impacts my children. It impacts my parents. It impacts my friends. So I want to make a change. The last thing that really struck home with our leaders was the idea of encouraging community ownership of a health initiative. So it takes on a very different focus when it's me and my neighbor who are trying to get everyone to do this walk-a-thon versus when the health department comes in and says, you need to exercise more, you need to make sure that you're eating fruits and vegetables. So having the community really lead and take control of sustaining programs was seen to be an effective strategy. So what are our next steps for this research? Well, as I said, we are still in the stages of going through all the transcripts and really pulling together the themes, so finalizing that. But then the next step, I really think, is building on that with some quantitative data. So if we can find that these variables that were related to promoting healthy living in the community are associated with lower rates of obesity on a larger scale, this does lead the idea that there are potential ways that we can help translate that information. So I just want to say thank you for listening, and also thank you to my collaborators, Elizabeth Bradley, Christina Talbert-Flagel, Daniel Keane, our two interns, Patrick Ng and Leah Hamner, and Jessica Holzer, who also helped with this study. And if you have any questions or want to email me, that's my contact information.